Welcome to episode 28 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is April 8th, 2012. I am Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-egg seeker, James Furlough.
Hey, I found one that's all chocolate.
Oh, baby. Yeah, I found a bunch of tech eggs this week. this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. My favorite part. James has got a short disclosure before we get into the meat of the show.
HP equals me, but not opinions of said company.
Nice.
Yeah. So as a result, my opinions should always reflect myself, and I should say I, and if I ever say we, I meant to say I.
In regards to HP.
Just in regards to life.
Okay, good point. Yeah. Yep, okay. Yeah, we're not making any financial advice, nothing like that. It's just our opinions.
No legal advice?
Exactly. and especially this week. For some reason, legal stuff was a big stuff. Big deal this week. If you'd like to follow us, and you can always check us out on Twitter, I'm at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And then the show, of course, is at Furlough Bros. You can also go to Facebook and like us, or Google Plus and Plus One us. It's funny, I say that most weeks, and plus one-ing just doesn't roll off the tongue like liking or digging or...
It just plus us? Upvoting.
Yeah, plus us. Maybe that's what I'll do. Say, plus us. Increment us.
additional us.
And you can also go to, of course, everything is kind of funneled into furloughbros.com, the website. Go there. Check it out. I like it. It's cool. Got good stuff, good content. All the links for all of the stories you'll hear tonight, all sorts of stuff. Check it out.
Yeah, we put in a lot of effort to maintain that.
Yeah, and as I stated last
time. Not a lot, but...
enough. It seemed like a lot to me.
Yeah. Speaking of content, there was an interesting story.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's what I do. The title of this story is "Can We Panic Now? Core Gaming Has a Problem."
I read this title and I got excited.
Yeah,
I can sense E3 coming up because people are talking video games. It's in the news.
Yeah, they have a picture here that has absolutely nothing to do, I think, with core gaming. It's like a Wii and a tablet with a little stylus attached to a wire coming out. Maybe that. Anyways, that's the picture. The article is talking about, can you guess, core gaming and its potential problem. And it was a little bit different than what I thought it was, which is why I thought it was interesting to share. Because I think that instead of saying core gaming has a problem, I think the better way to say it is mobile gaming is less risky.
Okay.
And because what they talk about is that with core gaming, there is a huge investment in that game, just in terms of like money, time, resources, you know, all those things. And they're spending a ridiculous amount of time and money putting these games together with the hope that it becomes a blockbuster hit so they can pay for, you know, everything they've done. And I don't remember if they actually give any figures for what it is that they do. But I mean, but suffice it to say that they spend millions of dollars to create these games. Ooh, I saw the word million.
It's
1.5. Oh, no, that's different.
Yeah.
But anyways, but the point is, they will spend millions of dollars to create these, you know, core video games.
Well,
you know,
from a strict dollars and cents perspective, they're bigger than the biggest blockbuster movies that have ever come out. I mean, they're bigger than right. Avatar in how much they cost to develop and how much money they make, and they're insane. So yeah, the stakes are pretty high. You know.
Yeah, no, they totally are. And you know, so you kind of like a movie, you know, you got to be pretty certain that it's going to work out, and you know, and things like that. And more importantly, if you are not good at that, you have an issue. You have a problem.
Right.
On the converse side, what they're finding with mobile games, or you know, mobile apps, is they're significantly cheaper to develop. And part of that is just because it's more of a casual gamer market. So you're not going to put together a 40-hour video game. You're right. going to put something together that people pick up for 15 seconds, maybe 2 minutes, and then they put it back down and they go off and do their life. Or they're going to play, you know, they're going to buy the game and for a couple bucks, they're going to play it for a few hours and then they're done, right? It collects dust and digital dust in some folder.
And even the biggest, you know, games that actually take a while to complete, like Plants vs. Zombies or Angry Birds, games that have been developed for a while, even those, you're talking a max of 5 or 6 hours, you know, which is, you know, compared to a full-blown, quote-unquote, core game, that's, you know, peanuts. That's a,
well,
that's
and
a boring
game. Even then, like, I was going to say, like, with, like, those games, it's really... They have the same core concept that they repeat over and over and over again, and they just tweak the situation a little bit.
Right.
You know, so from like a core development standpoint, they're not that complicated of games, really. You know, the interesting part is the puzzle piece, and even then, it's not even a creative puzzle per se. you know, it's just you know they limit your resources and they limit you in such a way where you got to get creative finding solutions. Anyways. So what they're finding is that developers and companies want to focus their efforts on these mobile games because they're less risky. Hey, you know what? Let's throw $100,000 at this game, see if it sticks. If it does, awesome. If not, hey, whatever. You know, we're out $100,000. And they give the example of OMG Pop, where they made 3 games in their lifetime, and Zynga ended up paying them $180 million because... They happened to come up with one game, Draw Something, that was a hit.
Which, and, by the way, have you played Draw Something?
Oh, yeah, I've been playing it for the last week or so.
What the heck? Why haven't you been drawing something with me?
I don't know.
I'm great at it. I'm so good.
Are you?
Oh, jeez, right. Yeah. Here. I don't even use words. I impress people.
I didn't... Good. That's a good thing.
you play with friends that don't use words. All the people I play with use words.
Oh, really?
They don't use the word, but yeah, they'll like they'll, if the word is Jersey, they'll say the blank shore, you know, and draw the Jersey Shore. Yeah,
that is so lame.
Hopefully, Chelsea's not listening to this because I just made fun of one of her drawings specifically. But sorry, Chelsea.
Yeah, well, let's find me, or I don't even know how to find you, but we'll find each other.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we'll totally play. No, I don't... You don't use words, please.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Unbelievable. I mean, I'll use arrows and stuff, and if like a billboard or something, for example, that, you know, would have words on it, yeah, okay, I would put the words on that, but, like...
I use copious amounts of arrows.
Arrows are important.
I gave the example of drawing an igloo once, and I just drew the igloo, but yet I surrounded it with arrows pointing to the igloo, just in case.
All right. Yeah, so we'll have to do that. But so you get a game like that, right, where they show ads in between each round, or you can buy the one and not get the ads. And I can't imagine that they spent millions of dollars creating that app. That's just
no.
I'm pretty sure they didn't. But yeah, you know, it sells well. And like I was saying, this was a company where they were able to try to put out 3 different games, 2 of which were total flops. I bet you don't even know what they're called.
I have no idea myself.
Exactly. You get 1 big hit, awesome. They make money to the point where Zynga is going to pay buku bucks for them, bring it into their fold and make even more money because they'll be able to cross promote and, you know, do that game. You know, and that's the other thing too, is like you are able to, for that same budget, you can make tens of games and then cross promote. And so let's say you have a mediocre game, big deal. You're going to cross promote it and you're actually going to turn it into a good game just because you're going to get enough people trying it out, seeing what it's about. And so as a result, what these guys are saying is that companies, you know, rightly so, are saying, you know what, let's not focus so much on the, you know, on the big multi-million dollar titles, the big risk games. Let's focus more on these casual, cheap games to make, and we could have a bunch of little wins and build those wins on top of each other. And yeah, you know, we're not going to have that blockbuster, you know, multi-million dollar hit anymore, but that's okay. We don't need it. We can iterate fast. We can learn fast. You know, especially in the mobile space, things happen, seem to happen so fast. You can't spend 2 years developing. By the time you do that, you're done. You know, the phones have already moved on to the next cool technology, and you got to re-render all your graphics anyways. Right. And you got to make it compatible with a new OS anyways. So it's kind of like, do it fast, get fast, which is kind of sad from a core game standpoint. Or, I don't know, they started out with Pong, and then eventually they got more complicated. So
Do you want my thoughts on this?
No, not at all. Let's move on to the next story.
Okay, what's the next? Okay, so so I think...
April Fools, no wait.
So I thought this was... I was excited when I saw this title. You had linked the article because... So one of the things that I notice, and I'm going to use my deep knowledge of the financial activities of the movie industry to draw an analogy...
deep knowledge, huh? Tell me more about
knowledge,
that.
Deep knowledge, yeah. I've read a couple,
I want your credentials.
I've read a couple internet articles.
Yes.
So this is, yeah, so I'm not, you know, this is how I understand
BS,
it.
Yes, I still think that you should get into the reviewing of trailers business.
Oh, I think about it more and more and more, you know, but my desired website name is just taken. trailertrash.com, and you know, I don't recommend you search that. I actually this is a clean podcast. I actually highly recommend you not go there. but that's what I'd like to call it. So I've got to think of a better. I got to think of a catchy title. One of the things that happens in the movie industry is, like, you know, the big question is, you know, it doesn't seem like it would be that difficult to make a decent movie. Why is it that the movie industry puts out, year after year, tons of bad movies? And the answer is...
What are you talking about? I just went and saw Hunger Games. That was okay.
Oh, yeah? You like the Hunger Games?
Yeah. Cool. My wife cried pretty much the entire time.
Oh man, I literally last night I finished the second Hunger Games book, so I'm cranking through them.
Did you cry in the first book?
I have teared up a little bit in both books. Not like cry, but like, you know, that kind of cutting onions experience. Like, man, this is emotional.
Is my door closed? So my wife totally had, like, set down the book because she couldn't read the words because she was so bleary-eyed.
You know, I believe it. There are parts where you're just like, man, this is cool. I can feel it.
Like, even good. The beginning where she volunteered to save her sister.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Jesse was already in tears. Dude, whatever. Yeah. It's like... 10 minutes in the movie.
It's like the fundamental print, you know, like plot point of the entire series. If you missed that one,
yeah. So anyway, so yeah, so Jesse was like a ball the entire time. It was awesome.
Yeah, sweet.
Kind of detracted from my experience, to be totally honest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Nothing like anyways. Someone crying uncontrollably during a movie. You'd just be like, what?
So anyways, so Hunger Games is an interesting example because it is such a, it's going to, you know, it broke all opening weekend records. It's going to do crazy
did
well.
It?
Oh, the movie's gonna make unbelievable amounts of money, and I think rightly
Shocker.
so. It's a good movie. It's a good story, and
The movies, they should have figured this one out. Like, that's your target market. Ignore Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. Go after 13-year-old girls.
Oh,
just do that,
yes,
and you'll be fine.
Yes, they, yeah.
Twilight.
The whole idea of the whole idea that like the target audience for big movie corporations is 16 to 25 year old boys is so antiquated.
Joke.
It's not even funny. But so anyways, so they're going to make tons of money on this movie. And like I said, rightly so. It's a good movie. Now, the question is, at the same time, the next weekend, they released a movie like Wrath of the Titans. Which, if you haven't want nothing more than a bunch of pseudo gods fighting with a lot of CGI, it's perfect.
Yeah.
but it's nothing more than that. And the question is, you know, why can't you put a new story? Why is it a bad movie? Or movies that just completely flop. And the answer to all the those questions is that the movie industries, when you have a big, big blockbuster like Avatar or The Dark Knight, or, you know, one of your, you know, they make nearly $1 trillion on this movie worldwide. You know, they make unbelievable amounts of money. And the reason why that's so significant is because, not $1 trillion, $1 billion. And the reason why that's so significant is because it pays for a lot of flops. But the problem is that those movies don't come around very often, or often enough where you could employ all the people that are required to make a movie like that successful. You require tons of people. It's an entire industry. And so a lot of times they make movies that they don't expect to win on. They know that they're not great movies, with the only intention of employing the people that build sets and do makeup and
really?
Camera guys. Yeah, there's an you know, it's the whole idea.
Why
of,
would you spend the time making a poor movie? I mean, I really feel like.
Well, the answer is this: the guys that are making the movie read the script and have to judge the movie based on the script. And a lot of times they sit there and they go, "It seemed like a good script." Or in all cases, they say, "It seemed like a good script. What were we supposed to do? We didn't realize it was going to be this bad when it was done." You know, and
I think weird. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. I'm not in the industry. I don't get it. But you would think when you're talking about, oh, we need to give these hundreds of people something to do, we're going to spend millions of dollars on it, maybe we should hire a couple guys to kind of sketch this out a little bit more to help us determine, you know, give them a short list. But all right, maybe not, I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, it's a weird industry in that you know, they know that they're not going to win on every movie, and they don't expect to. They're and the reason I say that is because, but yet they still make blockbusters, and they've gotten much better over the last 30 to 40 years of really consistently hitting blockbusters. You know, when you look back in like the 70s, they maybe had one or two blockbusters every 2 or 3 years, whereas they have 3 or 4 blockbusters a summer nowadays. And that just has
That's
to do
true.
With the machine has gotten better at picking good movies, putting together the right teams, advertising, and they're getting better at consistency. But there's still huge risks. It's like John Carter earlier this summer was a massive flop, hugely expensive to Disney, and everybody who sees the movie says it's pretty good. I don't know why nobody likes it. You know, nobody seems to understand why Disney just killed it on, you know, on John Carter. So all of this, I draw the analogy of, I think what you're going to see is, I don't think you're going to see the disappearance of the core games, because those they make more. Every movie that I just listed, any big release of a video game makes more than that in straight revenue. I mean, it's insane how much big video games make. And, you know, I think with the core gaming stuff, I think you're going to have a similar experience. Sorry, James, you're freaking out.
You just turned off your monitor.
I did, because I was lagging a little bit and I wasn't sure if it was my side or your side. Cool. All right. I'm going full screen on my documents. Anyways, so the idea that I think you're going to see is that, you know, to make a good video game, it still requires an army of of programmers and game developers and voice
yeah.
actors and modelers and artists. And I think what you'll see more and more is sort of you'll see a lot of those mobile games will be proving grounds for programmers and developers as they and a place where when the big titles come, they have an army of programmers that they can move around. I think it'll actually I far from damaging the core gaming, I think it'll really strengthen the industry because it'll give it the flexibility year to year, game to game, to really move programmers around from, you know, especially with companies like Zynga, as the mobile companies start to consolidate into bigger and bigger studios that have a lot of different programmers, they'll start to make bigger and bigger games because they'll realize that, you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
I could definitely imagine, you know, them, for example, doing it at kind of a Farmville RPG, and they get after the graphics and they straight up charge for the game, and it still has all the social plugins like normal, and now it's not so much a $60 risk for the customer because they're like, oh, I already played the free version and I liked it. So maybe I'll try this one out too, you know. And so you could see them decreasing risk in that way too, because they kind of got a storyline. Maybe that's not the best example, but you know what I mean.
To draw the analogy back to the movie industry in Hunger Games, it was a really successful book. It was
yeah.
Hugely successful book, and so they decided to turn it into a movie because they knew that there was much less risk by using an unoriginal title, you know. So.
Exactly.
So I think it's a good thing. I'm not worried for them.
All right. So you're not panicking.
Nope.
That's good. Cool. So, you know, also talking about preparing for the future. Man, I'm on a roll tonight. I read a couple articles, which it's not a pet peeve. It's a hot topic, I think is the, or a hot button for me, I think is the right way to say it. And there were two articles. The first one is why all our kids should be taught how to code. I'm sure, you know, you've heard me talk about how my kids are going to learn how to code.
Yeah.
At a younglin age. And this article, which is actually a UK, The Guardian, newspaper, so it's talking about the UK, and I think it's just as true for the US and, well, the entire world. And then there was another article about when code is hot on TechCrunch, and it talks about like Code Academy and some other places that are starting to take off. But what they're saying is, and I like 1,000% agree with it, is that kids need to learn coding for the same reasons that they need to learn history, and they need to learn reading, and they need to learn math. And they're saying, like, kids don't need to necessarily learn a specific, like, coding language, even though that's, you know, they probably will.
it's hard to teach how to code without picking one.
Yeah, but it's like, but they need to learn different concepts, like what's recursion, or what are algorithms, and you know, and they just kind of said like it would just be put under the computer science thing, and then let's see, yeah, and actually learn like what are those things, and then how to implement them. Was kind of what they were talking about. You know, and the reason for this is that we are moving into a world where, you know, let's say you just want to get into manufacturing, right? You can't be like drop out from high school and say, I'm going to get a manufacturing job. It doesn't work that way anymore,
right?
You know, at least in the U.S., you know, you need to understand kind of a little bit how electronics work, and, you know, and how those different, you know, just the general concepts. You don't necessarily have to have like an engineering degree to get into manufacturing, but you should understand some of those fundamental concepts.
Well, and one of the, you know, within manufacturing, the guys that make a good living that really, you know, are able to supply for their household and everything, are the guys that are running CNC machines, computer automated stuff. And there's no hardcore programming going on there, but understanding why a CNC machine works and how G-code is related to that and how solid models are, and all the different aspects that go into that, being able to at least have a context for that would be really helpful when you're learning what you're doing, or I would actually argue that you don't want to teach your kids HTML, even though I think it's a good thing to include, but I think that you're doing yourself a disservice if you limit yourself to something like a markup language, because like you said, you don't learn any of the principles of recursion or logic, gates or anything that are fundamental. How what is the if statement? What's the while statement? What's a for loop? And those are things that have been around for 30 years and will be around for as long as any computer programmer can imagine. They're fundamental.
Well, yeah, totally. And I mean, and it goes all the way from like little things, from like using it in Excel, you're going to use these if statements to make complicated spreadsheets, to, I mean, like simple things like debugging your computer. Right. Just for, if you understand like programming, just even just a little bit, for whatever reason, it's going to help you maintain your computer to keep it in tip-top shape.
Right.
Because you're going to understand it just a little bit more.
And computers are becoming so fundamental. I think that it is. I think sometimes I used to compare it to like learning an instrument, where it's really helpful because you learn how to read music, you learn stuff about tone, and it makes you a more cultured person, and you can appreciate the arts more, which is great. I still think if you have the time and can afford it, I think that's a worthy thing to teach your kids. But I actually think that computer programming is not like that. I think it's much more like math. I think it's much more a requirement in life. It's so fundamental that to really, and more than just understand how a computer works, but understand how programs work, I think is, it's the underlying, basis of everything we're doing nowadays in first world countries.
Yeah, it's interesting. In this TechCrunch article, it even says that you need to do it at a young age, similar to learning an instrument or a foreign language, which, is also just fascinating that it puts it with the arts as opposed to science, where it's kind of like, well, you kind of need to understand calculus before you can really dive into physics, and you really can't do calculus until you're like a junior or senior in high school. Yeah. And so, but it's interesting that he puts it in that category, and it's just one of those, you just need to start immersing kids slowly in this. And he's talking about Code Academy, which is a pretty cool program. I've messed around with it a bit. Of course, they do. It's JavaScript, and I kind of know it, so it's not. you go, oh, fun exercise. I know this.
Thanks.
I feel like I'm like trying to get a certificate in something I already have, and I don't need that. But anyways, it was just fascinating. I'm reading it, going, oh yeah, this is cool. And I think what's cool about it is to see a couple different articles talking about it. I mean, it clearly, I think people are waking up to it and saying, yeah, we need to do this, and this is important for my kids, going into the future. I don't have any kids yet, but when I do...
Are you expecting any kids?
I am not.
Okay, because you just said, I am, and then there was a pause. I was like, whoa, James, you don't need to announce this on the show.
No, I am not.
Okay, cool.
So I just thought it was cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. I like that a lot, and like I said, I think that's up there with math. I support any school that starts teaching that. Especially because one of the things that are in, especially in America, our justice system is based on the whole idea of being tried, and then by you know, a jury of your peers, of people that supposedly have a knowledge base that allows them to comprehend what's going on and really understand it. And really and truly, that's true of all of our of all of our justice system, including when two companies go at it over copyright, and you know, specifically for, you know, tech companies, because it can kind of be a sticky question of, did you steal my technology or not? And who owes what? And so this all brings us to a little bit of what I think is really the most exciting of the Android legal battles, because unlike a lot of the Apple Android battles where they're going over, we talked about it a couple months ago now, but what are they called? They're industrial patents. The idea that they're more generalized things to protect more generalized concepts. Whereas the Android versus Java, Google versus Oracle battle, I think is a little more interesting because it's a little bit easier to sink your teeth into, and I actually think Oracle is going to be a little bit meaner than Apple will, believe it or not.
Really?
Because I think they have better legs to stand on than anything Apple's gone against.
Mm.
Because, you know, so for those of you who don't remember, basically, Android was originally, when they originally announced it, Android runs as a virtual machine on top of a kernel within on your Android phone. And this would be similar to, like, when you run Java on your computer, you have your operating system that runs programs specifically written for your operating system. Well, Java has a virtual machine. It's like another computer running on your computer that can process a completely different type of code. Hmm. And that's Java, that language. I mean, they call it the Java virtual machine, the JVM. Well, it turns out that they don't share similarities just in concept. They literally share the same code.
Awesome.
And with the original release of Android, not only did they share their same code, but there were references to the name Java in the code and the file structure. And, you know, Oracle took one look at the Android code and went, excuse me, you guys are using Java, and Android or Google is like, no, we're not. It's totally different. And then they actually dug in and they realized there are still references, because it's basically what they did was they copied and pasted entire chunks of the source code for.
Is that because it's open source, or how do they know?
Yeah, it is because it's open source. They're able to get into that code.
So then why are, because Android's open source. I don't understand why.
No, okay. So this is the thing. Java is free, but it's not open source. Oracle, it was created by Sun Microsystems but it's an open license, but you're not allowed to sell, basically a competing Java virtual machine. You can write Java code. You don't owe anybody any money when you write code in Java for using Java, but you can't make a device that runs Java. Any microprocessors. There was a brief period where it was really popular, the idea of making microprocessors that you could code in Java, and the reason for it was because Java was so well known and easy to program in. That the guys designing the chips didn't have to create a whole new programming language. But the chips became ridiculously expensive because the licensing fee for that, for being able to run Java code, was insane. And so where an equivalent chip that ran on BASIC, or PBASIC rather, would cost $40, the Javelin chips, as they called them, that ran Java, would cost $140, you know, which is just ridiculous. And that's just has to do with the nature of Java being it's a proprietary program, but the language is free for use. Well, so Java, so Android essentially is essentially a competing virtual machine, and it runs a Java-like code. And so the thing is that Oracle is basically saying what they want from Google is they want Google to pay a licensing fee for every device sold, and they want them to pay a back fee of like $40 or $50 a device. I mean, and we have numbers that I probably aren't going to bring up this week, but I'll just mention it now. They're basically saying Google's only making like $4 a device anyways. And so they would go hardcore negative numbers if Google wins this, not to mention that it would be, you know, tens of billions of dollars in back settlements if they win outright. And so everybody thought that they were going to be able to go come have a discussion, go sit down, work out a deal. And Oracle was pretty stubborn. Google was pretty stubborn, I think, because both of them, you know, to right now Google has the pot of gold and Oracle sees a huge pot of gold and they think they have a pretty good claim to it. And Google is afraid that if Oracle wins this and wins everything they want, it will put an end to Android. It'll just become too expensive.
Wow.
Yeah, which is nuts to think about. And I don't think Oracle thinks about it that way. And this brings us to another article that I came across, which basically was arguing Isaacson, the biographer for Steve Jobs' biography, basically said, you know, I've gotten to know Tim Cook. I knew Steve Jobs obviously very well, and he thinks that Tim Cook is likely to not go quote thermonuclear like Steve Jobs wanted to on Google, and will basically settle with Google and say, yeah, just pay us. And so, for every Android phone sold, Apple will get a percentage of that cut, and they'll make money off of it.
Which
so
I still really think does... is a smart thing to do.
Oh, it's...
Then you can get into licensing agreements, and Apple can say, no, we actually don't think you should do that. And now they have existing, you know, contracts and agreements, and they could just... they could really mess with Android. Well, we think that you can release that, but you have to wait 6 months.
Right. And, you know, it's made Microsoft that sort of mentality of, sure, you can use our technology, you just have to pay us a small fee, has made Microsoft trillions of dollars over the last 40 years. I mean, it's ridiculous. So it's obviously a winning strategy, and Tim Cook's a smart guy, and he's a little less passionate than Steve Jobs, I think. And so I think that's the way that's going to go. It's going to end well for Google, but you know, the Oracle thing is really is a big cloud, and it starts trial 2 weeks from now. So you know, within the next couple of months, we'll know how bad of a situation this is going to be for Google, if it is a situation.
Do you want to make any
predictions?
Yeah,
I think Google's going to owe Oracle a ton of money, but they're not going to have to. The end settlement will be Google pays Oracle an unbelievable sum of money, but they won't owe them for per device units. They'll pay them $10-30 billion to be able to just end it, and it'll be what it is. I think that's where it's going to end. It's going to be but I think it's going to be huge, and I think it's going to be in Oracle's favor because I from the evidence I've seen, and you know, and obviously what you see in the courtroom is not necessarily what you see in the blogosphere, but from what I've seen and what I've read, you know, Oracle's got a really strong case here, and it ain't going to be pretty for Android if that evidence is, you know, true. I have no reason to question it. I like stuff that, you know, I like conflict.
Yes, you do.
This one kind of, this is an, I thought was an interesting article. Also came out on Monday. One of the things that, the new iPad's out. People are talking about what's been going on between Android and comparing them. And you know, if you've read any reviews, the pretty much the universal decision so far is that you know, the new iPad is the best tablet that's ever existed and never will exist, and yada, 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 which is, you know, probably unfair. But what I liked about this article that I read, it was Anintech is the website.com. Mm-hmm. They did a pretty fair job of really kind of talking about the strengths of Android. And one of the strengths, and I think that this is, and this goes back to our core gaming versus mobile gaming thing. One of the staples of mobile gaming is the touch interface. I still think that that's, you know, without a tactile feedback, haptic sense, as they call it, you know, like a joystick, I think, you know, really hardcore, quote, core games are difficult to play. Yet the touch screen gives you this... Yeah, yet the touchscreen gives you this huge, new interface, and so I think you can make really, really cool, fun games that take advantage of both. And Android has done a great job of supporting external peripherals that give you the joysticks.
Speaking of which, have you played Infinity Blade?
I have not. I have not.
It's because it's interesting because you know they talk about the graphics and stuff like that. It's from a gameplay standpoint, relatively straightforward and simple.
Oh yeah,
which was kind of a surprise. And for starters, it is fun, and you can sink a few hours in it, no problem, and totally enjoy it. But it's like they add these buttons which you're supposed to use to like move to the left and right. And yeah. I, for the life of me, cannot figure out why did they not just make like the right hand, like take the right and the left side inch of the screen and be like, just tap anywhere on that.
Right.
And he'll move over. Instead, they have like these two small little buttons, which I'll be honest, like a quarter of the time, I miss.
Right.
And, you know, because the guy starts swinging and I freak out and I tap and then I get hit. And you're just like, come on. But if it was like, and there's no reason why it couldn't be just like, give me that whole right hand inch of my 3.5-inch screen.
Right.
And, you know, let me hit there. Or I guess it's... No, it's the longer side. But anyways, the point is, it's got plenty of room. I don't know why they do it, but it's like they're stuck with this button mentality, and it drives me nuts. Or make the buttons 3 times as big. Whatever. I don't
really
care.
Make them transparent, but...
Huge. Well, they are transparent, which is the other thing that gets me. It's like, so why are we going... You know, it's like they're trying to minimize it so that it looks super pretty.
Yeah.
But kills me.
Like I said, I think if you...
Literally,
you know, if you,
kills me.
If, yeah, really. You know, the left-right side of the screen, you know, the cool part about that is that if they're just big regions, you don't need buttons. They're just regions, you know?
I'm pressing them. It's not like I'm doing a D-stick trying to move at the same time. It's literally either I'm pressing with the right thumb or the left thumb, or I'm swiping. Those are my options.
And I think with those games, you know, what's really kind of interesting about that is, like you said, the gameplay yet is still very straightforward because the controls are limited. So if you could bring a controller in, you could create these crazy complicated games with great graphics, and you could change mobile computing. Well, the thing that this article said that's kind of exciting... first time I've ever seen this.
Of course,
the
other problem is that it's going to go from a 1 gig game to a 14 gig game.
Well, yeah. You call that a problem. I call that an awesome game.
iPad's filled up, and then you're like, well, that was cool.
My 16 gig iPad, yeah, great. So one of the things that they talk about in this article, like I said, it's the first place I've ever seen this, so as far as I know, it's breaking news. They basically said Apple actually has an internal project where they're building a physical controller to bring to market.
Huh. iPod Touch? Or for the iPad?
iPod Touch, iPad, iPhone, your whole suite, that's what they say. And... this article doesn't say if it'll be Bluetooth or if it'll be, I think that's, I'd be shocked if it's not, but, you know, if we're to go through the, your 30-year dock connector, but, you know, there's, James, you're so unoptimistic. But the
I just have clarity, that's all.
yeah, I know.
Jobsian clarity.
Yeah. but the thing is, that they're also talking about is that, you know, Apple will probably do what they classically do, which is they go, this is obviously the best controller you could possibly buy in every single way, but in case you have bad taste, we'll also support third-party controllers. You know, classic Apple move. And but what it'll do is it'll open up it will really open up a. And it's something that's funny. This is something that have wanted to see for quite a while, and I've kind of had this dream of making a compact container that works, you know, like a clamshell that would act as like a case for your iPhone, but pops down and has a little, you know, slider joystick thing and a couple of buttons, and either plugs directly into the dock connector or has a Bluetooth. I'm just saying, this is what I've been dreaming of. You don't need to. Okay. But my idea would be that it would be an open source API would be included so that other games could drop your object into your API into their game.
Right.
Use your library, and then all of a sudden they would have use of this and my thought was, you know, if it's an open source circuit design, controller design, open source programming, and you just so happen to sell a really nice, beautiful version of it and a really cheap plastic version of it, you could make a ton of money just by selling these versions and saying, yeah, sure, let third parties compete with me, I don't care. It looks like that's exactly what Apple's doing. So it's always good to know you have a good idea. It's always terrible to realize that somebody who's way more capable of making money than you is going to steal it. So that's where we are. I'm excited to see it. I hope it turns out well, and I think it'll really, you know, it'll legitimize what Google has been doing in there. Because, you know, there's that hesitation with developers, I think, that's common, where, you know, am I going to develop a game just for the Android market that doesn't give me as much money? Or am I going to, you know, wait until it's a function that's available on the iPhone or on iOS and then take that game and port it to Android, which, you know, is what's common in the industry right now. So I think that, you know, Google clearly beat them to it, but I think Apple's acknowledging a good idea when they see it, and hopefully it'll improve the entire market.
Hey, by the way, I'm thinking about porting my game to Android.
Yeah.
I don't really have a game yet, but, you know.
You're hypothetical. You're
I'm thinking about porting it.
Game?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Thinking about porting it. I don't have a game, actually. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I wish I did. I wouldn't be doing this anymore. April Fool's. Wait. Man.
No. So.
Oh, gosh.
Cool.
That is neat. We'll see. I mean, controllers are... I don't want to say controllers. I think having new and different input devices are cool.
Yeah.
Let's get away from just the, what is it, picture under glass? Is that the...
Yes, that's the term.
Yeah.
The term we learned. Haptic feedback. That's the other one. That's in the news all the time. I want tactile feedback. I want my fingers to know.
To touch. So, speaking of smartphones... So something else you want
right.
to share about
okay.
that?
Right, okay, jeez, yeah.
Wink,
sorry,
wink,
man.
nudge.
Thank you.
Your line is.
So, Piper Joffrey.
I say Jaffrey. I don't know. I don't know.
Piper Jaffrey. They're a...
Jaffrey, kind of like a nasally.
Yeah. They're a group of analysts, and one of their big
names...
that's
a huge article, man.
I know. Yeah, it's like
four sentences.
Lines. I've read other stuff. This was a terrible article to link to because I've read more elsewhere. Well, there's an entire like video that goes along with it.
So
you gotta watch the video.
All right. Fair enough.
But Gene Munster, he's a good guy. I've you know, somebody who's watch CNBC during the mornings occasionally because I'm that type of guy. Slash, our mom used to do it while we grew up. I've seen Gene Munster before. He's a pretty smart dude. Anyways, he has basically he's made a couple of interesting comments earlier this week. One of the which was Research in Motion's going out of business.
Yes,
that's the headline.
I called it.
Yeah, I was going to say, thanks for catching up with us, Gene.
Gene's a smart guy, yeah. Literally, he's the listener of our podcast.
Right. But he's a, yeah, so that's, you know, that's pretty big news, you know, pretty big deal when analysts, big-time analysts are, that's their call on CNBC in the mornings. You know, that's not good for your company. And one of the things that he said was basically, is basically he thinks that it's a two-horse race. And what's really fascinating, I thought, about this was that the two-horse race that he thinks that that the game is isn't between Apple and Google. It's actually Apple and Samsung. He thinks that...
Samsung?
Yeah, Samsung specifically with...
I'm losing trust in Gene.
Well, okay, this is his argument. This is his argument, is that... people are only going to be able to really focus on a handful of actual devices that have a certain brand. It's not, you know, it's like when Motorola
was... Yeah, whatever. tell Microsoft that. Tell HP and Dell and Acer and...
Well, but there's a difference. There's a difference between... There's a difference. You have to acknowledge the fact there's a difference between Microsoft during the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s and Android today. Because Windows, didn't matter what computer you were on, the operating system didn't change at all.
That's
Whereas
true.
Whereas the operating system changes from device to or from company to company, and oftentimes device to device, but at least the suite of apps and your experience, even though they're similar from one company to the next, you know, you can tell it's Android. It's not the same Android, and so they're...
So, okay, all right. So the reason why this is important... the concept is called a network effect, and the classic example that they and you know those guys you know always used was the fax machine, right? What's the value of one fax machine?
Nothing.
Yeah, but if you add two fax machines, all of a sudden there's you know quite a lot of value because you can send faxes,
right?
And the more fax machines you add to the network, you know, the more valuable that original fax machine becomes.
Right.
You know, telephones, blah, 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 you know, works the same way. The reason why Windows, you know, took off is because of that same thing of I could hop onto any Windows computer and I could use Excel and I could use Word. And those were kind of the big ones, you know, back in the 80s, right? There was no Internet Explorer. You know, and so
Quicken was another great example.
Yeah, you know. Quicken, and you know, and they made their choice very early on which horse they were going to back. And so, you know, if you were starting up a small business, you had a Windows PC. Duh. I mean, there was just no question about it. You know, like you said, if anything, to do your accounting, and it was because it had those apps that you know that you were needed to do it. And so there was, you know, so developers, they would say, well, I'm going to make my program for the PC because, you know, for Windows because, you know, all these people are already on it. I've got a huge market base. You know, we've talked about this that, like, you know, people who create viruses, computer viruses, they're going to target that one because, you know, huge market, blah, 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 whatever. And, it, you know, it just it helps build itself. We've talked about this with Apple's ecosystem, right? everyone's on these phones. They're all the same. If I'm a developer, I'm going after this group. You know, that's the idea. I think, you know, one of the beautiful things about the World Wide Web is, you know, it doesn't matter, honestly. You know, if you're doing Gmail, who cares if you're on Linux, if you're on Windows, if you're on a Mac, if you're on your phone, if you're on a tablet, if you're running out of options, on a Chromebook,
right.
you know,
TV,
Kindle
Wii,
Fire.
Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's because of the internet, you know, you just got to create the interface. to make it happen. So I think like those ideas of the network effect are extremely less important, because no matter which Android device you choose, you're going to be able to surf Facebook and check your email and do those type of things. And there's no like killer differentiator yet per se on, you know, between the different Android devices where you go, oh, you definitely got to do this one, other than maybe a Kindle Fire, you know, right. that's the weird one out there, right? Where they are actually taking the time to create some differentiation. The only other thing that I could think of is like today I had a guy, he was asking me some questions about his phone, and he was like, how do I mess with the permissions? And he had an Android device, and I was just like, I have no clue. And
sorry.
Yeah, well, I, you know, my reason, right, I use an iPhone, so I really have no clue. But I could also see, you know, if I owned an Android device, going, I still have no clue on how to do this. You know, it's crazy. You're going to laugh at this. So I'm a part of a Bible study. There are two guys there. They have two phones that have the exact same name. They look nothing like each other. They're totally different.
What name is it?
It's like I think it's like the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, the Galaxy S2, that's, you know, I was going to say, I actually spent a couple hours talking with Keegan the other night, and because he had just bought a Galaxy S2, and going through all the different models and everything that they did, and like, there was the original version that had a great chip, great battery life, awesome screen, but no LTE, and then they like, didn't sell very well, and they like pulled them off the shelves super early. And then they came back where they downgraded everything, and they just tried to fit the only thing that they wanted to do was to have an LTE phone in basically the same package, but it's a different package at the same price. So everything else, like all the other specs, are awful except it's LTE. You know, and so you go through all your data in less than an hour. And
so maybe that's what happened. But I mean, but there's a weird thing, right? Where it's like, this phone is called the exact same thing, and it's a Samsung phone, but yet like these are not the same phones. And I don't know what the software is like, you know, if those are any different. But I could imagine a situation where, you know, even those two could go like, hey, how did you do this? And they'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
How you do it. So all that to say, I think, you know, the reason for a single manufacturer to take off is not nearly as compelling as it used to be, I think, even though they're adding their own UI. Because it's like, yeah, Facebook's going to work. Your email's going to work. You know, those, quote, core apps that you have to have on your phone, text messaging, making a phone call, you know, those are all the same. And it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's. I think you have a valid point there. And the other thing I was going to mention was, you know, he seems to think that Microsoft has no chance, because the two front runners have already taken such a stronghold, as he sees them, Apple and Samsung. But one of the things that I think he really misses is that it's like, you know, this is something that you and I have been observing since the PlayStation 1. You know, the idea that the video game industry or the platform industry really seems to only have room for two systems at a time. There can only ever be two succeeding video game platforms. You know, it was like Nintendo and or Sega and the Super NES, and then it was the 64 versus the PlayStation, and the Dreamcast just collapsed under its own weight and ended up, you know, being bought.
Dude,
you know,
Sega those was bought by consoles? Nintendo. Man, those two consoles, PlayStation and the N64, man,
classics.
That was the heyday.
That was video
gaming was good back then. Not to say that it's bad now. Man, that was classic awesome.
Oh yeah. That was something cool. It was a special time.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that it's like, you know, Sega couldn't survive when Sony was doing well. True. And it's funny when you look at it, there's like, you know, there's a 100 different reasons you can look at that when you can say, well, you know, they didn't do well because they did this wrong and that wrong and this wrong. And I think those are all valid observations. But ultimately, I think the real underlying force is that only two systems can survive. And play, you know, they did a number of things that allowed them to lose to PlayStation. You know, only one was going to, or only two of the three were going to make it. You know, and then as soon as the PlayStation 2 came out and the GameCube came out, once again, you still had two systems that were doing well, but it was really the advent of the Xbox that just crushed the GameCube in America. It couldn't survive in America. And then when the Wii came out, you know, the Xbox 360 had come out. It was, you know, it was doing really well. The Wii and the PlayStation 3 had been announced, and the Wii and the PlayStation 3 were coming out on the same weekend. And there was this real expectation that, man, we might see something change in the industry. We really have, you know, you have your two competing high-end gaming systems in the 360 and the PlayStation 3, but the Wii is kind of exciting because it's different. Maybe there is room for a third horse in this three-horse race. And then Sony had a number of things that they stumbled, and the PlayStation 3 stumbled for a long, long time. And it really wasn't until the Wii stumbled and stopped making games and selling systems.
Weird.
That the PlayStation 3 took off. And just like, it's impossible to get out of. But what is interesting about it is that even though the Xbox didn't sell well, Microsoft had the money and the motivation to put it, to get it into the market, make a presence, and hang around until they had the 360, which was really where they did gangbusters, and they became, you know, they jockey for first and second place all the time.
Now, I don't want to open up this Pandora's box, but yeah. So far they've been totally ineffective with Bing, despite doing the exact same strategy.
Well, have they though? I mean, you know, yes. nobody Yahoo searches anything anymore. And even if they do, they're actually Bing searching it. You know, I don't think they've been successful.
Have made a zero dent against Google, though they're at like 15% share. Congratulations to them, but it's not.
Yeah, you're right. They are not. The strategy is not a win. You know, they're.
But maybe hardware is different. Despite them being a software company, they understand hardware very well.
That's true.
And the internet is neither software or hardware. It's right. A totally different beast.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy to think about. Maybe they stand a chance. And I actually think they're going to – it's going to be the tablet space. It's going to be Windows 8 is how they're going to backdoor into the phone market. And because, I mean, you can see the logic, right? They're going to start shipping Windows 8. They're just going to do it. You know, and HP and that other company that starts with a D are going to start doing it. And they're just going to sell millions. What was their quote? It was like one every 2 seconds. For HP alone. And they're just going to start flooding the market with these things. And you're going to get developers who go, yeah, well, let's try this Metro thing out and see what happens, you know? And they're going to start making these plugins. And Microsoft's going to go, hey, have you thought about making one for our tablet ARM architecture? Especially if they don't have to do any fancy programming to make it happen. You know, they can literally, like, port it or tweak some things or something. You know, if Microsoft can figure out a cool way to make that happen so screen size doesn't matter, you know, that could be pretty darn awesome. And then from there, it's a very simple, hey, have you thought about making something for the phone? This could work.
Right.
And, you know, and now you've created this app ecosystem thanks to Windows 8 that is really just, an, you know, from their Windows 7 or phone, whatever, 7, whatever their names are, you know, they can start to extend it. And which once you get that app ecosystem and now you've got people who are, you know, looking for a smartphone, I'm like, hey, I recognize this. This is on my desktop at home.
Right.
You know, I could definitely see that. It still might be only a two-horse race, especially, you know, depending on what the Oracle case
right.
Does. But, you know, I don't know. I see what he's saying. And at least for now, totally true. Totally get it. Yeah. I don't think Microsoft and Nokia could stand a chance on their own.
Right.
With just the phone. I totally agree with him. No way they're breaking into that market. Microsoft's going to, you know, be stuck in Zune purgatorium.
Right.
With
They're
it.
either
Just,
gonna
yeah.
do what they did with yeah, I don't know what I was gonna say. Never mind.
But I think they're not gonna compete against the iPhone. They're gonna compete against Android devices, and they're just gonna play the app ecosystem game, and they're gonna use Windows 8. Because, man, once you, I mean, think about it, right? Once they've got however hundreds of millions of Windows 8 devices out there in the world, you've gonna a couple developers are going to make a Metro UI version of their app. Come on.
Oh, a lot of them are, I think,
I would, unless it's completely possible that for whatever reason this Metro UI completely flops and everyone just instantly clicks out of it and
you know,
goes back to the regular screen.
the only thing I can say is that nobody that I've read, no
Which
reviews of any devices, nothing,
I would
has
do.
said that what?
I would just say I would probably click out of it instantly.
Yeah. Well, but from what I've read, everybody really likes the tiles, the Metro feel. They think it's a well-designed UI is
Yeah, all
what
right.
I've come to read, which I think is, you know, promising for Microsoft as a company. You know.
I think Gene is right for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I agree too. And then I think it, you know, the race will change. Speaking of Microsoft, actually. Wednesday was a very special birthday.
It was.
37 years ago, two men started something that would change the world. Microsoft's birthday. Birthday.
Happy
They
birthday.
became a company on April
Fourth.
4th, 1975. 1975, whoa, to develop and sell basic interpreters for the Atari 8800. 8800. Microsoft rose to dominate, but but yeah, it was 37 years ago, Microsoft did their thing, which is crazy. I think it's a long
Wow.
time ago.
Bill Gates is actually old now.
Yeah, he really is, you know.
Wow. Cool.
So,
Happy birthday.
you know, woohoo!
They're still kicking.
Yeah,
That's
they
cool.
are. They haven't given up yet.
No, we just told them they had a shot at becoming the other horse.
Right. Don't let it go to your head, guys.
Yeah, really. So let's talk about the future for a second here.
mess up. All right, I'm excited about this
Maybe a
one.
little longer than a second.
Okay.
Let's talk about Project Glass.
Project Glass.
For those of you who don't know what it is, get out from underneath your rock and read some tech news.
Yeah, well, tech news. I heard it on every major, like they were joking about it on like late night. They I would my the news slash, you know, political talk show that I listen to in the morning, they talked about it. So this is
So it's a big deal. So
yeah.
you've heard it. Now you may not have watched the video, and if you haven't, go to our website, furloughbros.com, and the link will be there. And it'll just say Project Glass. It's through their Google Plus page, because that's what they're doing now instead of like Google Blogs or something. And there's a video there. It says Project Glass one day dot dot dot. And you know, basically it's a concept video that shows here's what this could be someday. I kind of half hope that that's not the case, but you know, it's cool. So Project Glass are the glasses, the Google goggles that have been rumored and that I've said like pretty much I would buy instantly, because I'm into that kind of stuff. I nerd out over it. Though, ought to be totally honest, dude, I probably will chicken out and not buy these.
Man, you
But
always chicken
I
out when it comes to
know.
cool new technology.
You
The
know,
iPad,
my
it's amazing,
problem.
it's so awesome, and then
I
you're like,
know.
I just can't justify it.
The problem is, I don't make enough money with this podcast yet
What?
to justify these kind of exorbitant expenses.
Right,
And
Gooey?
let me be totally honest. My life is boring, okay? I do not live in New York. I do not have hipster friends. I do not like take pictures of art on random streets and go, wow, that's amazing. I need to share it with all of my Google Plus
You
friends.
don't learn
I
how
don't learn random songs on the ukulele so I can talk to my
to.
wife. That is not my life, okay? I use Excel. So let's just get that out of the way right now. I think I pretty much gave every single use case for these glasses now. And I live in a small town. That's the other thing, right? I don't need directions on how to get somewhere. I know
Well,
where it is.
you have already talked yourself out of this completely. That was impressive.
Having said all that, though, this is pretty awesome. I'll have to say, like, literally, like, if one of those things were true in my life, I'd be all over it. I still might. I don't know. No. Okay. Well, here's the other problem, right? And actually, there was an article, again, on TechCrunch, because they have some good writing, that says why Apple and Facebook should be terrified of the Google tinted glasses or goggles, which they're not goggles at all. It's literally like a piece of glass in front of one of your eyes. It's kind of weird, to be honest. It says geek pretty fast. anyways, and their whole reason why, and one of the reasons why I'd have to like think twice about it, is my guess is that it's going to be exactly as we described, which is it's nothing more than a display and input device for your phone.
Right.
Most notably, your Android phone and your Google Plus network. And duh, their concept video shows all of their stuff. But if I were them, that's what I would be developing for, because I have all the tech for that and I can make it happen. Plus, it, makes you better over Apple and Facebook.
Right.
These two companies that, like the article said, should be totally afraid. And I completely agree. I see something cool, I take a picture, I'm going to share it on Google Plus because my glasses just kind of magically do that. I'm not going to say open up my Facebook app and do it. I don't know, maybe I would, but I would if I were Google, I wouldn't build that in even kind of. I would have Google Plus would be like deeply integrated. Totally. And then you think about that other company, Apple. You literally like you got to pull your phone out of your pocket and look at the screen, and if you want it augmented, you got to hold it up, and that's just as nerdy. And so there's got some huge benefits there. Of course, knowing Google, they'll make it all open source and let anybody plug into it because they're nice like that. In which case, there'll be some hackers that come along and make it work for the iPhone,
Right.
which cool for me. But dude, it's pretty awesome. I'll be honest, pretty darn cool. I do think Apple and Facebook should be afraid. And just in case you think it's years out, there was actually a sighting of Sergey Brin, one of the Google founders, using it in the wild.
Oh.
Robert Scoble saw it and got a picture with him wearing it.
Wow.
And Robert said he didn't get a chance to try it, so he doesn't know if it actually works or if he's just literally
Trying.
walking around with a random glasses trying to
You
generate
know,
buzz. I
this is
bet they
my.
work in some capacity, but go ahead.
I'll bet they work well. I'm willing to bet they work well because, you can build an, incredibly expensive little device
Ha.
and that, that'll work. They exist all over the place. I mean, we talked about it at CES. There were multiple different companies deploying, doing some sort of heads-up display technology. My only thought, my first thought was I watched the video and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool, I'm like, oh, it's all hipster and everything. And actually, my first thought
A
was,
little
wow,
hipster.
James is gonna love this. What?
Little hipster.
Yeah, I know.
Dude, I do love it. I do totally love it. I just want to be clear. I love it.
Yeah, right. No,
I
I
wish I
understand.
lived that guy's life. I'm gonna love it that much.
I know. Okay, I got you. But the thing that got me is the video is all first person perspective, so you can see what he's seeing, which is,
Yeah.
the right way to do that sort of a video, but you never actually see the device until you go to their Google Plus page. The thing's ugly.
Really? You think so?
I thought so. I took one look at it and I was like, whoa, that's not very pretty. Well, you see, my thing is that, okay, this is just me personally. I like to wear aviators. I own a pair of aviators. I think aviators look cool. I like the really thin rims, going all the way back, big glasses. That's kind of my style. And these are not that at all. They're, the
No.
thick, thick, It's
like half of Geordie glasses.
Right. They're just, you know, which
they almost
they're
look
not...
broken, to be honest.
Right, exactly.
Like there's something missing.
And the thing is that they're not designed to be sunglasses. They're designed for a very specific, you know, from a very specific engineering perspective. And then they're shaped and, you know, they have a nice little, you know, curved body to make them look nicer. But they're, you know, they're very, you can tell just by the look that they're very, very functionally driven in their design.
Yeah.
And,
I'm okay with that.
You know, and, you know, a lot of, this is where I probably will upset a few of our listeners. You know, if you're really into the engineering of stuff and that design or that function, you know, champions all, I think you're wrong. I think when it comes to selling these things and having people wear them and look cool, people would much rather buy an a MacBook that will overheat because it doesn't have any fans in it because Steve Jobs didn't think it sounded cool. They're going to buy that over over a device that has a brilliant heat transfer to keep your device cold. Obviously, one of those two devices has sold like hotcakes. The other one is a niche product for tech geeks.
So the Mac is a niche product?
No. I mean, well, you know, I'm talking like where you have rigs that like they're, you know, with tons of fans designed to keep your system cool.
Oh, okay.
That's your niche device. Those that don't sell as many of those as they do MacBooks, like, you know,
water
especially.
Cool. Yeah.
Right.
All right.
You know, and the engineering me likes them, and I think they look cool from an industrial, technological, you know, engineering perspective. But they just don't give me you're not going to see some starlet walking down, Ventura Boulevard, you know, wearing her Google goggles. They got to look cooler than that. That's going to be an uphill battle. If they're going to sell like hotcakes. And the reason why I say all this is because I don't think Apple specifically or Facebook has to be worried yet, because I don't think Google's the company that's going to make them look beautiful. But it's not. That's
It'll
not
be
sort
Samsung.
Of thing. Right. Well, yeah, somebody. But I think somebody
it'd be
else.
Motorola, right?
Yeah, you know, yeah. Technically, it might be Motorola, but you know, I think it's, you know, I get the feeling that it's going to be like, they're going to be designer glasses that are going to be, you know, partnering with technology companies, and you know, it's like the, you know, it's like the Porsche BlackBerry meetup for, you know, executive phones. We made fun of the phone, but that's the idea, where it's like, you know, you're going to get industrial designers working with other third-party companies, and when that happens, yeah, it might be powered by Google's software, but you know, people are going to want to be able to sell to every device, because it's not going to be Google making them. It's going to be other companies, and they're going to sit there and say, why doesn't it connect with your Microsoft computer? Why doesn't it connect with your iPad? We could be selling billions of these instead of millions if you just let us connect to other devices. And I think Google's going to, you know, obviously they're going to preference themselves and they're different, you know, the different ways that they can, but I think that it's ultimately going to be a very universal device if Google wins. Because, and the reason for it is because they can't make pretty things. That's right. That's the fundamental problem that I see with it.
Well, okay.
It's just my opinion.
I still want one.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, me too. Don't get me wrong. Unlike you, I'll probably buy one when I can afford it. Because I'll sit there and I'll say, you know, well, I don't need it, but I'll find a reason to need it. I want everyone to know.
Dude, I know what you'll do. You'll just go to the store and play around with it for a few hours, and that'll be enough.
Yeah, that's so true. I used to do that with toys growing up. Like, I would go to Toys R Us and play with the box, just looking at the toy inside the box for an hour, and then leave and be fine. I never actually played with the toy, but that was all. I just wanted to imagine what it would be like playing with the toy. Which is, yeah, that's so true. I go to the Apple Store all the time just to imagine what it would be like to have this toy. Oh, jeez. that almost sounds sad now.
Yes, we had good parents growing up. Let's go to the store. You can play with it there, kind of.
Window shopping.
Yeah. Oh, loved it. So I have some sad news.
Yeah.
Yahoo laid off 2,000 employees, 14% of the workforce.
Wow. They decimated their workforce.
Well, that's only 14%.
No. Well, James, decimate comes from Desa 10. Decimate literally means to get rid of 10%.
I knew that. Totally knew that.
Anyways, yeah.
I'm all over it.
Get rid of 14% of the workforce.
Yeah. Anyways, they're doing a similar thing. I don't understand how this works. Well, I do. I just don't know why. Companies, because HP did this once too. They were like, "We're gonna get rid of 5% of our workforce." And it's like, how did you come up with that number? I'll tell you how. They had some sort of budget number that they had to hit, which in their case was $375 million, and they went, "Oh, I know how we can get rid of that. We'll get rid of, you know," they literally went, "What's our average employee salary?" Divided it by that number and went, the answer is 2,000. There was probably some rounding involved, and it won't be exactly 2,000 at the end of the day, but, you know, gave them some good rough estimates of what they're going for. They have no clue what those jobs are.
Right.
They don't know how many of them are critical and how many are not. They just know, oh, we all have to get rid of about 14% of our staff, and some people will only get rid of a couple, and some will no longer exist. And they're going to play this game. And I remember going through it with HP, and it was horrible doing it. You know, obviously, I was lucky enough to get to stay around. I have some friends who were not. And, you know, just going through it, it's dumb, is really what it is. And it's a shame to see them to have to do it, because it also means that, you know, they're doing some cost cutting to help them survive. You'd love to see it, typically, at least with HP, the way that we always frame it is we are changing our strategy or realigning for awesomeness or something like that. And, you know, but unfortunately it requires us to restructure, and unfortunately that means that some people are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, that's at least how HP likes to pitch it. And I didn't read much of that in Yahoo's, other than we need to cut costs. And, you know, they'll be trying to something.
Well, so this is a question then, and it's something that we've talked about on this show before, about the difference between MySpace and Facebook. Why is Facebook a sustainable company and a threat to other companies where MySpace never was? And the argument that I've always used is that at its core, MySpace was a content company. At its core, Facebook is a technology company. They're a company that's pioneering new technologies.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you noticed this, but investors have been starting to call Facebook a media company.
Yeah, and I think it's
Zuckerberg
a
isn't showing up, and Zuckerberg isn't showing up to meetings to defend himself. So that's going to be interesting in the long run.
Yeah, well, it's stupid. I mean, it's the dumbest thing you could do, because it's, you know, because I don't think media in the internet world, media companies don't survive, because media can go anywhere. It's fungible. It's all about the technology that's deploying it. That's where your real power is. And if you're not advancing I've always said, you know, I think the fact that their comment system is, and their login system is the backbone of so many major websites nowadays, is huge for Facebook. That's the future for them. And so my question here in this case is, what is Yahoo nowadays, you know, other than a website? They're just a website with content. They don't power their search engine. They don't They don't develop new internet technology. They don't make cool apps. They don't do anything to push the envelope forward. All they do is, all they do is bring together media and information, and they don't do it themselves. You know, they don't do it in a, it's not like Google where, you know, they don't, where they build their own search engine. Bing powers Yahoo. And, you know, you sit there and I shrug my shoulders and say, of course the company's dying. They're collapsing. And it's crazy because, you know, I drive by their corporate office not a couple times a week, and, you know, you see it, and it's like it was this, you know, bright shining light for the longest time because they were a technology company, and they were bringing a new technology, and they were pioneering the whole idea of being able to search through the internet, and a new way to navigate this massive ocean of data quickly and efficiently. And, you know, for a long time that carried them a long way. But it's the same thing that's going on with RIM. This is ridiculous because I realize that it's probably a little bit of Team USA going on, but I feel bad for Yahoo, where I don't feel bad for, well, it's Team Santa Clara that I'm, you know, it's, they're the hometown, you know, team, and they're collapsing under their own weight, but they don't bring anything to the table anymore. They don't do anything that really, like, that, in my opinion, you know, says they deserve another chance. They deserve to stay around. They, as a company, they're doing something and they're not being acknowledged for it, or they're not making money even though they're doing great work. That's just not true. They're not doing anything. You know, they're doing what anybody can do. They're bringing media to people, and they're not doing it in a clever way. They're not doing it in a way that changes it, and they're not doing it with any sort of, you know, advanced technology. And, you know, so it's, I don't know. I don't feel bad for them, and it's because, you know, if you're, you know, and you know, you hate to see people losing their job during a down economy. Like, I really do feel bad for those people. But at the same time, your company's not doing anything. Like, it's hard to feel really bad for too long. It's not like it's a really, it's just a company with a steep history, or a deep history rather, and a legacy of greatness, but that's not who they are today. So,
right.
You know, why would you expect them to stay around or do well?
Because it's Yahoo. Yeah, no, yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. Unfortunately. We'll see. You know, hopefully they do become smaller, more nimbler, and blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah. You know, there's, hopefully they can bring out some new piece of technology, but I don't think they're trying to. That's the real sad part. I don't think that they think that is their path to greatness. I don't think they have engineers coming up with new products. I think they're trying to figure out how to compete with AOL.com, which is, you know, that's where they see themselves. And it's just, it's a joke. The whole thing's a joke. Yeah, they'll stay around, but, you know, they're not getting anybody excited.
No. Yeah.
So, what else, Keys? Sorry. Oh, right. My turn. Man, I am doing bad on keeping track of when my articles are coming up this week. So Freedom Pop, cool sounding company. They have a new and cool product that they're trying to bring to the table. Basically, it's free mobile internet.
I like it.
Yeah, so this is the deal. Freedom Pop is trying to launch a free mobile internet service for the U.S. for U.S. users this summer, a move that is likely to demand a change of strategy for established wireless providers. So that's what this article says, and we'll discuss whether that's true or not. Basically, Freedom Pop will use Clearwire's WiMAX network to give users 1 gigabyte of free mobile internet access per month.
Wow.
What they say is that's more than what most users currently consume.
Not me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that's just not true, but they're using the same magical numbers that AT&T uses for their throttling numbers. Only 3% of people use more than 2 gigs a month, but yet it seems like everybody gets throttled. You have a 1 gig max. They will charge you if you used over 1 gig, but it's like he says it's less than a penny a megabyte, which if you do any quick math is $10 for an extra gig. So for 3 gigs of data in a month, it'll cost you $20. That's basically what it comes down to with these guys.
Yeah, it's a little bit cheaper than others.
Yeah, it's definitely cheaper. And they have a couple of cool.
A little bit cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. They have a couple of different cool devices. One that'll they have a piece of hardware that'll plug into your iPhone because you don't have the WiMAX antenna. They have a mobile hotspot, which I actually think that's a pretty compelling idea. The hardware is actually free as well, except there is a deposit that you have to give for, I think they said it was damage, and make sure you don't resell it because it's free. They want it back.
So how come they can give it away for free?
It says another similar service, NetZero, also provided free low-cost plans, but only allows 200 megabytes of data. What? This is the question.
Was they would have ads, is what NetZero used to do.
So Freedom Pop may take some time to figure out the perfect revenue generation solution, and which network to partner with.
What are they doing that's disruptive and innovative?
The first gig is free, so for most users, you will have free, literally free internet. Is what their argument is.
It's going to be ad funded, but fine. All right.
Yeah, you'll have to deal with ads. Which honestly, we took the NetZero bait as a family when we were young and they were young and it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Especially because where we lived, it was, you couldn't get, we lived far away from the,
Oops, sorry. Looks like we lost Matthew. Let me get him back. All right, I found you again. You were talking about how we used to use NetZero as kids growing up.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good solution if you want free internet. You know, for us it made a lot of sense because we weren't very close to any, real broadband. High volume data pipes. We couldn't get any optical cables or whatever, so it made sense for a number of reasons, also including the fact that it was free. I think obviously what these guys are going to try to do is they're going to try to generate a user base for offering it for free. That's kind of their early thing, and I think I gotta believe part of their expectations is that people are going to go over their limit and going to have to pay $10, and that's part of their revenue generation is going to be that kind of expectation, which, might be a little bit disingenuous. But, if it's $10 for 2 gigs and that's what you can afford, then that makes sense. And, it's funny. I don't actually think it makes sense on your iPhone at all, since they're almost always sold. You can't get just a data or a phone plan anymore. But as a free mobile hotspot, that's kind of a cool idea. NetZero, I think, really kind of, I think they helped shape the market in this idea that they're, low cost internet. That's what they wanted to do. It's not great internet. It's not a lot of data, but it's free. Kind of this idea that we're going to bring this to everybody. And so if they help move that, and I think they're in that direction, it's going to help out. But I don't think it's actually going to be that disruptive.
I would agree.
Just because all the issues that AT&T and, number one, AT&T and Verizon service 99% of all, Americans, and I don't think these guys are going to have quite that coverage. They'll probably do big cities and stuff, but not much more than that.
Well, especially if they decide to do the ad thing, and
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, it's worth watching, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Something like this could be majorly disruptive. I think one of the coolest parts about it is that they're not using, your classic mobile telecom. They're using WiMAX, which is a, you know, it's a different uses a different part of the broadband spectrum. It's or the sorry the electromagnetic spectrum. It's a different type of broadband. I don't know. So I think there are cool things that they're doing, and hopefully they'll alert people to the possibilities that are out there. But you know, in and of itself, it's not going to change the world, I don't think.
I agree.
So one of the things that we like to talk about on this show is security issues. Microsoft, obviously, they get the brunt of the complaints. Google follows up, follows closely behind, but Apple, for whatever reason, has been able to get a clean pass pretty much all the time. Nobody ever gives them a hard time for viruses. They're virus proof, as some people like to think. And obviously that's not true. Any security system can be compromised if the user intentionally compromises it. And there are different levels of intentionally compromising it. And one of the easiest ways to infect Macs, and it's one of the ways that they've been almost universally attacked, because there have been quite a few Mac viruses out there over the years, just not very big ones, has been the Trojan. The idea of having a program that you download that has a bit of malicious code in it, and once you've downloaded and executed that code, and it could be like a valid piece of software or a game or something, that Trojan will come in and will infect your computer and open it up to other viruses, and they'll shut down parts of your security system that are supposed to prevent that from happening, that are supposed to prevent unauthorized attacks, and it gets pretty nasty pretty quickly. So this is, and I just want to clarify, it's first off, it's 600,000 Macs, so it's a huge number. It's a pretty big deal. Definitely, if you have a Mac, it's worth checking out your Mac. We'll have a I believe there's a link in our article that where you can get that checked out, but we'll probably have we'll have a separate link for how to figure out if you have have the Trojan, because it's important to get clean these up. It is a botnet, similar to some of the botnets we've talked about in the past, where your Mac can be used for, not necessarily against you, but can be used for malicious activity around the world. One of the things to notice is that, once again, this isn't a worm. It's not self-replicating. It doesn't infect your systems without your use. Speaking of Java, they target a vulnerability in the Java virtual machine. And so it's actually a the malware was in as they say the malware was initially found in September 2011, masquerading as a fake Adobe Flash player. So, it's used vulnerabilities in Flash, it's used vulnerabilities in Java, but once it's in, it's in, and there's really nothing Apple can do to, or very little Apple can do, if a user's going to unintentionally grant them access. It's like the example is, your house, you want to keep intruders out of your house, and so you build up a crazy security system. But if you unlock the door, if somebody knocks on the door and you open it up and you let them in, and they're, a malicious, individual, all that security doesn't do you any good, because now they're in your house and they can turn off your alarms as they see fit, or your security systems, because you let them in. And so, anyways, yeah, get yourself checked out.
I will have to do that.
Yeah, because that's a, it's a big deal. And there are claims that Apple themselves got infected, because they can look up IP addresses, locations for where the phones are or where the computers are, and there's like 250 computers that were targeted in Cupertino. And so people suspect, oh well, probably Apple's campus then. And you sit there and go, like, it's Cupertino. There's like 10,000 Apple employees, not to mention like a huge portion of the citywide revenue is generated by Apple. What do you think the chances are that there's not, you know, 30,000 Macs in Cupertino, you know, yeah, off really. Of campus? You know, that's, geez, that's, that could be, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there were infected computers within Apple corporate, just because, you know, no firewall can keep something out that you invite in. But you know, that doesn't change the fact that,
well, heck, for all we know too, they could have a lab where they're, you know, they're constantly testing these things and looking for them, and they've got 50 computers in that lab.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that triggered the honeypots. Yeah, you know, and one of the things that one of the things to mention here is that this was September 2011, so this has been a known issue. There is a patch for it that once you have it, your computer won't be vulnerable to it anymore. You know, it's like a lot of the bot, you know, like the like we talked about with the one botnet. Oh man, Conficker has had a patch out for like 3 years, and yet it's still, you know, growing and changing just because of the nature of pirated software and software securities not being updated and stuff. So stay on top of your security. Get your system cleaned.
Oh. Yeah. All right. I'll do that. Thanks for the PSA.
Yeah, I'm here to help.
Appreciate it. So this last thing I want to talk about is more of a rant. So I was surfing Facebook, and I saw an article posted by a friend, and I clicked on it to read it. And it wasn't even like that amazing of an article. I was just, you know, bored and was like, yeah, what the heck? Facebook says, hey, awesome. If you want to read this article, allow this Yahoo, or grant Yahoo permission to share your reading habits, history, with people on Facebook automatically.
What?
Oh, yeah. And I was like, no. So it took me back to the timeline. Or, you know, whatever that is, not to the article.
Yeah, brought you back to
it. So yeah. I was like, all right, well, let me try clicking on a different link within this status update. I clicked on all of them. None of them led me to the actual article. Literally, before I could read this article, I had to grant Yahoo permission to post when I read an article. And I was actually looking at this, and this guy had like 5 posts in a row of Yahoo articles. He was just reading the news. I don't even think he knew that he was posting to Facebook.
That's ridiculous.
Because the crazy part was, it wouldn't say this person shared an article. It was this person read an article on Yahoo.
Oh man, I don't want people knowing what articles I read.
Oh, neither did I. I was like, dude, if I'm going to share something, I'm going to share it. This is not what I'm looking for. You know, but this is all part of Mark Zuckerberg's exponential sharing growth vision thingy. So I was just like, oh, this is lame. Went on the Google, typed in the title, found the direct link, and then posted it in the comments. And was like, P.S., I thought this was lame. Here's the direct link. And the article wasn't that good either. And later that day, I wanted to do it again. This time it was The Guardian. Exact same situation. Oh, so frustrating.
And you know that though, yeah.
And Jesse, my wife, Jesse, was saying that the New York Times was doing the same thing to her. Because I wanted to show it with her, because I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And I was like, never mind, just kidding. Not going to see it. Lame Sauce 1000.
That's frustrating. That's ridiculous. I mean, and you know that The Guardian and Yahoo and all these different companies that are participating in this think this is, you know, great news, because now everything you read gets popped into your newsfeed. But this goes back to the fact that I don't use Spotify because I don't want people knowing when I listen to, you know, some Katy Perry song. Like, this is embarrassing. Do not let anybody know that this showed up into my music, please. Like, I'm, you know, I have a certain integrity that I need to keep up. And, you know, I don't want people knowing. But like, and it's, you know, and it's not just, you know, the, you know, and especially with news, man, that's like, I don't want people knowing, like, being able to it's bad enough that the New York Times knows that, you know, what articles I read. I don't need Facebook. I don't need all of my friends on Facebook knowing, you know. And it's like, I could just, because every once in a while I read a Paul Krugman's, well, I actually pretty frequently read Paul Krugman's op-eds. And, you know, and
you know, I don't know who he is, but
oh, he's cool. A Nobel laureate. But it's one of those things where I have quite a few friends that I think would, you know, like, I can't believe you read him, and I'm like, you know, what am I supposed to do here? Like, you know, he's obviously a very smart guy, and he comes from a certain perspective, and I want to hear what he has to say, whether I agree or not. You know, it doesn't, that shouldn't matter to anybody. But the problem is that if it's on Facebook, people will assume that agree or that I don't agree. And that's just like, that's frustrating to me. I don't want people knowing that. Don't do that, Facebook. Stop it, Mark. I disagree with this.
Well, and I mean, fine. You know what? You want to sign up for it and share your reading behavior? Cool. Have fun with that.
Right.
But to not let me read the article because I'm like, no, I don't want to do this.
That's
unless there was some
obnoxious
magic way to get to it, and I just was too stupid to figure it out. I guess that's possible. But I like to think I know how the internets work.
Right. And, well, it's, I mean, Facebook's notorious for that. How hard, you know, how easy is it to delete your Facebook account? It's possible, but it's super hard. Whereas, you know, turning your account off, but they keep all of your information, so when you turn it back on, it's all right there. You know, that's a totally different thing. But yet, that's really easy. Actually deleting it is extraordinarily difficult. Well, it's the same sort of thing where, yeah, you might be able to do it, but the solution is probably easier just to do what you did, which is Google it. You know,
which is crazy because that's exactly what Facebook doesn't want. But
right, I know. And to me, it's, you know, it seems, I don't know, maybe enough people are, you know, because it's like with the, you know, part of the problem is I think they got people into a habit with, you know, the Facebook apps where you don't even look at what it's asking to do anymore. You just click yes or no. You just click yes. And I think people are kind of in that, oh, let's just do another stupid apps. I don't really care what it does. But, you know, if I, you know, for us, obviously, it just means I'm literally not even going to look at news articles in Facebook. Because I it's funny. I actually knee-jerk react the opposite way. I didn't know that that's what it was asking me to do. I just realized it was asking for some special permissions. I didn't care what it was, and I said no. You know, because that's what I do on Facebook. And so this is ironic, coming from the two guys that, like, are huge fans of Google knowing everything about us. Facebook, I don't like these guys. But
but once again, it's like I explicitly share everything, and that's okay with me. And this this is totally different.
Right. And Google doesn't prevent you from getting to the article you want to read if you don't agree to their terms. You know, you can still easily, you Google it and you can click on it or not, or you can share it on, you know, you can plus it or not. It doesn't
Well,
really...
that's like another one that like Google Plus does this. It's a little weird. Is whenever I take a picture on my phone, it will automatically upload it to Google Plus for me.
Yeah.
But it's totally defaulted, like completely private.
Didn't you see that one commercial where the dude? It was some Google Plus commercial. I thought it was actually pretty good. It's basically this guy's like, you know, I used to not be very into taking pictures, but then I had my baby, and then it's like, it's literally like a minute and a half commercial, and they probably show like 100 like cute baby pictures. Like, you know, you can tell that that was like the emotional appeal. But like the storyline of the commercial is he had a kid, he started taking pictures with his phone. He took tons and tons of pictures, and then somebody stole his phone, and he makes the comment, you know, I used to not care about, you know, I've broken phones before. I've lost phones before. Like, that used to not bother me, but now it's not my phone, it's the memories of my baby. And he made and then he it was actually before a movie, now that I think about it. And then they transitioned to, you know, but on Google Plus, all the pictures were there. Everything was safe, thank goodness, you know. And because the phone I don't care about, it's the memories that are important. So I thought that was a cool message to get out there. Both, number one, this is a service, and number two, don't feel weird about it. You know, so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, you know, the fact that it's all, you know, whereas Facebook, there everything's default. No, you should tell everybody everything. And I don't mind that, but I want control over it, you
I
know.
still just Facebook still rubs me the wrong way.
I don't know
I
why.
just I don't
It's
know
so
either.
weird.
And I
It's
totally
the
use it all the time, but
I
they
know.
just I always assume that they're trying to do something weird to me. It's,
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not as crazy as it is. I feel like Facebook views me as a number and an asset as opposed to a real human being with real feelings. As I mean, which is like totally weird because that's like what they talk about all the time.
Right.
But
Well, it's funny. I actually what I think what's weird about that is that it's like Google is the analytics company. To Google, you are just a number. Whereas with Facebook, they like their whole thing is they want you to be a person. They want you to be a thing. But yet you feel like a piece of granite when you're being used by Facebook, whereas you feel like, you know, you're just a normal shopper, you know, having a great experience when you're in the Google's, you know, universe. Like, you don't feel like some tool in the cog. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Which is weird, given the actual attitudes of the two companies.
yeah, I'm. Yeah, Facebook, whatever. They're gonna be around a while, so I should get used to it, I guess.
Probably.
Eventually, I'll be like, "Do you remember when we were afraid to share our bowel movements online? Man, ha ha ha! How primitive we were."
Right. Just 6 months from now.
Oh.
Technology moves fast.
It does. It does. So, today's Easter Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Anything going on with your life?
Oh my gosh. So, did go to the annual family get together. There must have been, it felt like 32 iPads at this
Wow.
place. I now obviously there like aren't 32 members of our family, so it wasn't that many, but there were probably like half the clan was there, so there were like 15, 12, 15 people there. And there was literally seven
Wow.
iPads. It was weird, and I was just like, there were iPads everywhere, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is, you know. And obviously, I think we're, you know, we're I'm biased at least because I live in the Silicon Valley, and so I think there tends to be more, you know, of any given piece of technology here than maybe in Oregon or, you know, other parts of the country. But
Well,
there's
let's
definitely.
not forget that we have a relative who works for Apple in
Yeah,
Cupertino.
that is
And tends to influence family buying
that,
decisions.
and I'm pretty sure a number of those iPads were her kids.
Bought with an employee discount.
Yeah, but you
That's all
know,
right.
that being said, I remember the feeling I got when the iPhone took a turn, you know, because you know, I think back to when the iPhone was. you know, when it first debuted, you know, they wanted to be 1%, and you were part of a small crowd, you know, a cool crowd if you had the iPhone, and people oohed and awed. And I remember it was back at my girlfriend at the time, when she wanted her first iPhone, and our cousins were getting iPhones, and I started looking around, and I was like, this is weird, you people don't need smartphones, why do you have smartphones? But it was, they wanted it, and like so many, you know, things with, like they always tell you, it's like, you didn't know you needed it until you had it, and they all got them, and they all learned to love them, and now they can't live without them. And when I'm, you know, and I'm looking around saying, something's changed. And what I think is really interesting is that it's older, you know, it's adults that have that are the early adopters on the iPads, in my opinion.
Hmm.
But there's, you know, I really do feel like a corner is slowly being rounded where people are becoming – really are becoming dependent on these devices, and they're becoming common. I see them, you know, you can't go out to breakfast Saturday morning anymore without seeing somebody in the restaurant with an iPad. You know, and that to me is significant, you know. So that's my big, I know usually this part of the show is not necessarily in-depth analysis, but that's what affected me today. What about you? What's going on in your life?
I watched a lot of Frasier episodes.
Nice.
There's
on Netflix.
Yeah, there's a couple series that I want to finish up before I quit Netflix. So this is one of them.
Oh yeah.
I saw the shows that I wanted to see. So I could actually stop tomorrow and be totally happy, but Jesse's got a couple more that she wants to finish. And
oh, yeah, that would be messed up.
So, yeah.
Hey, Jesse, I canceled Netflix. I hope you don't mind. I had 3 episodes left.
Yeah. So, no, and I asked her, too, because she's a teacher, and I was like, so, do you want me to wait until next fall, or can I quit it before summer? And she was like, "Well, I'll be more productive if you do it before summer." So, I'm thinking within the next month we'll try to power through all of that and be done.
Well, I look forward to hearing about the withdrawal syndromes and withdrawal, you know.
Yeah, shakes, we still have Hulu, so it's not totally going to be.
Oh yeah, sure. That's, you know. I'm quitting cigarettes, but I still have caffeine, you know.
Hulu's free, which is nice.
Yeah.
That's the. Then we're still gonna buy movies or rent movies or whatever. So it's not like I'm totally giving them up. I'm switching models.
Right.
Yes. I'm putting my money somewhere else.
Still. You'll have to keep us updated on how well that works.
Yeah.
I'm sure. You know.
I am gonna see if there's a way to like put your account in hibernation mode as opposed to full out quit.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because that'd be nice. Because, you know, I've starred or whatever a lot of movies. But, you know, if I lose them, I lose them. Whatever.
Yeah.
All right, dude.
Cool.
Thanks for talking. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
And thank you, everyone else, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow. And we will talk next time. Oh man, I cannot get rid of this cough.
I noticed. What's going on, dog?
Ever.